become, go more deeply in our life of devotion to Krishna through prayer. And the topic I chose to speak on this evening is the prayers of Prahlad. Is there anybody in our audience that needs an introduction to who is Prahlad? If you don't raise your hand, that means you know. If you raise your hand, it means I need to explain who is Prahlad. Okay, good. Just like the Hare Krishna mantra or mantra chanting is present in all of the four yugas. Yes? Which yuga did Dhruva Maharaj live in? Satya Yuga. Did he chant mantra? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chanted mantra. Prayer is also appropriate anywhere, anytime. It's a communion of the heart with the Source, the Supreme, the different conceptions people have of who they're praying unto, but a person who hears and reciprocates. Now, Prahlad is very special. We heard the other day that prayer of Prahlad in chapter 10, we're going to be discussing chapter 5 of Canto 7, but in chapter 10, he says something very special. He says that he was sent by Lord Vishnu into this world to teach the way of pure devotional service. He understands that about himself. He's a Vaikunthavasi. He's a resident of the spiritual world. At least the Prahlad Maharaj that we hear in 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a little interesting over here. There are different yuga cycles, different cycles of the four ages as they move. So, at different times, there's different Prahlads. We know that because Sanatana Goswami quotes from Brahmavivarta Purana, if I recall correctly, another Purana, where he refers to Prahlad in a different way. Because I remember asking, wow, even within the womb of his mother, Narada knew he was a great devotee. So who was he before he was in the womb of Kayadu? What was his situation? So in the 7th canto, chapter 10, he was resident of Vaikuntha, sent from Vaikuntha to teach the way of pure devotional service. And he teaches. Through his prayers, he's also teaching. But Sanatana Goswami refers to a passage where Prahlad asks Lord Srinadev, how did I become so close to you, such a dear devotee of you? Can you describe? And Lord Srinadev describes, quoted by Sanatana Goswami, that in a previous life, you were a brahmana. And a little bit like the Ajamila story. Although you were born in a Brahmana family, you didn't study the Vedas. You didn't follow the Sangskaras. You didn't do any of those Brahminical things. Instead, you became attached to a prostitute. And you were drinking and carrying on with the prostitute. In fact, you hardly did any pious activities at all except one. And that one was as follows. on an auspicious day, which happened to be Nrisimha Chaturdasi, this brahmana got in an argument with his prostitute girlfriend. And when he got in this argument with the prostitute girlfriend, he became very upset. And he fasted the whole day and the whole night. He couldn't sleep the whole day, the whole night. He observed Nrisimha Chaturdasi unknowingly. So in this life, you become a devotee. And sure enough, the prostitute, she was also upset. She didn't sleep day or night. She fasted. So she got the benefit of Nrisimha Chaturdasi unknowingly. And she became an apsara in her next life, and then she went back to Godhead. And you're Prahlad, and you're going to go back to Godhead after this life, and you're going to live a long life. That's the glories of unknowingly observing this auspicious day of Nrisimha Chaturdasi. And there's another long section in Hari Bhakti Vilas, because it's a manual of how to do things, how to observe Vrata of Nrisimha Chaturdasi. So that's over there. Prahlad is, in our case, he's a Vaikuntha Vasi descending in the instruction of the Supreme Lord to do so. And through, he attributes, even this life, he attributes the bhakti that he has to the person who he received it from Narada. His bhakti and his having received Krishna's mercy, or Lord Vishnu's mercy, because he's a Vishnu bhakti. And so his prayers begin after he was encouraged by the demigods, because at the end of chapter 4, the demigods offer a whole chapter's worth of prayers after Lord Nrisimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu to pacify, to please him, and he was still very angry, transcendentally angry, and they were afraid. The goddess of fortune was afraid. So after their failure, they encouraged Prahlad. He came because of you. So can you pacify him, please? Prahlad is feeling himself, this is the beginning part of the chapter. Prahlad is feeling totally unqualified, but he's under orders of his superiors, the demigods, to do this service. So he comes before Lord Nrisimhadev, as we see here in this nice painting, and falls at his feet. And Lord Nrisimhadev, with his hands, or his paws, whatever, he picks him up. And just by the touch of the hand of Lord Nrisimhadev on the head of Prahlad, his whole body erupts in ecstatic symptoms. His whole body is trembling and tears streaming from his eyes, looking transfixed in samadhi upon the personality of Godhead. And then he begins to offer his prayers. So that's where we are. The first of Prahlad's prayers. Sattva ikatana gatayo. His symptoms of transcendence erupted in his body. Puru ganayar. So, Prahlad prayed, how is it possible for me? So his first prayer is dainya, or humility. No surprise. Because the entry into bhakti is through humility. And although he's most qualified, and later he indicates how he is most qualified, he's feeling himself not qualified. sounds like a contradiction, but it's the mood even for one who is qualified to not feel qualified. We discussed this. How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods, pictured there in the upper left, all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, and all the saintly persons, could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words. Although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness, what then is to be said of me? Explicitly, I'm not at all qualified. Ugra jate. Now, ugra jate has to do with his birth, jat. So he's born in a demoniac family, and he's pointing to his birth as his lack of qualification. Now, one of the essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the followers of Lord Chaitanya, which means also from the Bhagavatam, that one's position is not to be calculated based upon birth. One's qualification is based upon one's quality in work, guna and karma. However, Prahlad, like we heard already, Haridas Thakur, by birth, unqualified. By character, absolutely qualified. The part of Prabhupada's gloss of, or summary, of what Prahlad taught is, there is no material disqualification for entering into pure devotional service. That's negative. There's no material qualification required to enter into the realm of pure devotional service. So he's speaking of himself as unqualified by birth or also by association, because he's associated with only the asuras, the demons. So by association and birth. By education, little boy. The demigods, they're not little boys. They're vastly learned, speaking streams of eloquent, nicely chosen phrases. I don't have that qualification. That's the nature of a Vaishnava. They feel themselves not qualified like that. Prabhupada explains, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami similarly considered himself unqualified, lower than the worms in stool. That's his word in Chaitanya Charitamrita. More sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Did he really think that way about himself? Or is it just poetic? He really felt that way about himself. And when that mood of humility is there, what to speak of, we discussed this before. We can't relate to someone that feels like that about themselves, because if we felt like that about ourselves, who knows what we might do? Someone would call us something, depressed or crazy or something. It's extreme. But so, these are extremely advanced and extremely humble persons. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. Oh, remarkable Lord, it's hard to understand what quality you see in me that brought about such mercy. His placing his hand on his head and his becoming calm. One possessing sattva is not the cause of your mercy. What then to speak of a person possessing tamas? The devas and the sages' minds are completely immersed in sattvic dharma, jnana, and austerity. I'm immersed in adharma, ajnana, and material enjoyment. He adds, ikatana means exclusive tendency. That's his tendency, tamas. And simply praising you is not the cause of your mercy. They praised you with streams of words, which were fresh, cool, sweet, and pure like water, and which were embellished with ornaments and literary suggestions. But they were not able to make you satisfied. You are satisfied with me, though I'm born in a family possessing great tamas, ugra, jate. So, humility. And those who are most qualified were unable, and I'm unqualified, so why am I standing here before you? What am I to do? It's the mood. I'm sure some of you know this. Before Prabhupada came to America on the order of Bhakti Siddhanta to do so, he was feeling totally unqualified. There's this wonderful literature, Prabhupada. Mula Prakriti, one of Prabhupada's disciples, interviewed some of the elder Vaishnavas in Bhaktisiddhanta's line. And one of those persons she interviewed was one of the pujaris in Shantipur. For those of you who've been to Mayapur, you know where Shantipur is. It's the place of Advaitacharya. So it's very interesting. There, she interviewed one pujari who explained about Prabhupada as follows. In such and such a date, which turned out to be the day before Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta, one sannyasi sadhu came to Shantipur, and he was praying and crying all day long. And I thought maybe he needs some help, so I went and asked him, is everything okay? Is there anything I can do? And with tears, my spiritual master has asked me to do the most difficult thing, and I have no qualification to do this most difficult thing. I'm simply praying to Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to please give me the ability to carry out this difficult mission or instruction. And then he went away. I didn't see him for years. And then after some years, this group of Western Vaishnavas came to visit Shantipur, and they gave me one of their publications, Back to Godhead, and I looked on the back of Back to Godhead, and there he was, the same sadhu who I saw praying and praying to get the strength, the capacity to carry out this mission impossible. Prabhupada felt it genuinely. And there's other examples. That feeling, but so what was propelling him was the order of his spiritual master, which was his life and soul, and he had no option but to carry out the order of his spiritual master because it was his life and soul, although feeling not qualified. But just ask it again, how would we feel if the services that we have, and we actually felt totally unqualified? I mean, we probably feel unqualified. We probably also feel qualified. Some of both. We discussed this. Exalted personalities feel these things to an extreme degree. Anyway, that's Prahlad. Humility, dainya. Prahlad continued. One may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength and diligence, intelligence and mystic yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Again, the teaching, no material qualification necessary. One can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. And he refers to him by name. Gaja Yuta Paya. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. So, what was the exaltedness of Gajendra's birth? And that wasn't way up there in exaltedness. But, because of the impression, the sangskaras from his previous life as a king and offering prayers of devotion to the Supreme Lord, he offered with utmost feeling the same prayers, and knowing the difficulty of Gajendra and the sincerity of his prayers, Lord Vishnu came and protected him. Another example of this is Arjuna. This is a painting illustrating when the scene was there. Krishna said, I won't fight. One of you, you're both my cousins. One of you can have my armies. The other can have me, but I won't fight. So in the painting, Duryodhana sat by Krishna's head. I'll take your armies, please. And Arjuna stood by Krishna's feet, saying, I'll take you, please. But I shall not fight. I'll take you, please. So the devotee, like Arjuna, is not requiring opulence and strength and this and that, the other thing, resources. The devotee is requiring Krishna's shelter, Krishna's association, Krishna's kindness, Krishna's mercy. And similarly with Draupadi, the magic pot of Draupadi is being illustrated here. She was in great difficulty. Durvasa Muni, look out. When he gets angry, anything could happen. Bad. Krishna. So Krishna came and solved the difficulty. So when there's this feeling of, Dravida was using the word on Friday evening, of helplessness. When one is feeling helpless, if you're feeling, I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay, complacency is not the mood for intense devotion. It doesn't have to be like you're trembling in order to have some intense or genuine devotion. But the sense of independence takes away this sense of dependence, and in fact we're dependent. So whether things are going well or things are in difficulty, we're dependent. And that's the mood of Prahlad without material qualification. I'm going to skip this. This is one of those verses there's a series of them in the Bhagavatam. The most elevated brahmana, who is perfect in all brahminical qualifications, they're listed in one text, but they have those qualifications, but they're not a devotee. They don't take shelter. They're averse to the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. That person is lower than a devotee who is a dog eater. I don't know any devotees that are dog eaters. And I would imagine if someone was a devotee and a dog eater, they'd give up eating dogs. But at least they may not be of such an elevated position. Again, this is one of his primary teachings. There's no material qualification, disqualification. Doesn't mean, I'm a devotee, so anything is okay. I had a very interesting discussion, just some anecdotal sharing, but it was a flight from New York to Chicago. And it was Southwest Airlines, so in Southwest, there's no assigned seat. You sit wherever you want to sit, or wherever there's an available seat. So I like aisle seats, and I sat in an aisle seat. And one of the nice things about traveling at a Doty is not a lot of people want to sit next to you. So I often have an aisle seat with nobody next to me. And all the other seats in front and in behind, they're all filled up, and the middle seats, but you know, not always like that, but it's... But it, as the plane was boarding, there was a college girl that sat right next to me. And I thought, uh-oh, she's going to be the talkative kind, but she wasn't. She was, you know, reading. And so the short of it is, she was a Columbia University grad student, American girl, and she was deeply read in the Bible, and she wasn't trying to save me from going to hell or something. So it wasn't one of those kind of things. She, I forget how the conversation started, but the discussion came to, because she had her Bible with her, and I asked her, is it your understanding that animals have soul or animals don't have soul? And her answer was, animals have soul. That was her understanding. And then I asked her, are you vegetarian? She said, no. And I said, could you explain? Because the teaching of the Bible is, thou shalt not kill, and animals have soul, so you're killing the animals. She didn't give one of those, it's not killing. She said, there's no qualification found in the Bible about not eating meat. Then went through, like, you know, references from Genesis and on and on. And she was very, you know, opened up to the New Testament, this and that. And something in the book of Peter or Matthew or something saying one should not be eliminated from being a follower of Christ regardless of their diet. We didn't use that word. I said, okay. It's not a question of being eliminated. And I refer to this verse. Even if one is a dog eater, but is devoted to the Supreme Lord, that person is very exalted. But let me ask you, if you saw Christ, because the mission for a Christian is to please Christ. That's the standard, that he should be pleased. So he's, yes. So he's holding a lamb, and you look at him and say, can I have that lamb? I'd like to eat the lamb. What's he going to say? And I said, in your case, she didn't answer. So in your case, you're not in the Sea of Galilee, where it's just a desert, and all there is for edibles is fish, and you're distributing fish. You're a Columbia University student with means, and you have choices. And you ask Christ. He said, you don't even need to answer me. You need to answer your conscience. What would Christ say? When you have options, what should you do? So now, back to Prahlad's verse. If a devotee, it's like Murghari the hunter. He was a hunter. He was not just a hunter, he was cruel. He didn't kill animals. He half-killed animals and enjoyed seeing them flapping until he realized, whoops, they're suffering. So when the little light goes on that says another living entity is suffering, then I should do my best to modify what I'm doing that brings them suffering, if it's reasonable to do that. So a dog-eating devotee will give up dog-eating. And anyone who is genuinely interested in pleasing Lord Vishnu, whatever are the unwanted parts of our life, the strength to remove them comes from wanting to please Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna or Lord Nrisimhadev. Bhakti cleanses our consciousness and it cleanses our mind and senses and intelligence. So the verse says that person can deliver his whole family, whereas the brahmana that's not taken shelter of the feet of Lord Vishnu can't even deliver himself. So high qualification in a material sense doesn't bring deliverance from material entanglement. Ooh, how stunning. Kishore Kishori ki jai. In Sridhar Swami's commentary on this verse, he says, these high qualifications without bhakti produce only pride. And it's very similar to, we heard Dravida describe this verse of Queen Kunti, Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Shri. Good birth, good education, wealth, and beauty. Those are opulences that come as a result of piety, but without bhakti, it makes one proud. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's not pure equals pride. And when there's pride in the heart, one can't feelingly call out. So Prahlad has no pride in his heart. He has qualification. But he's not seeing the qualification. He's seeing shelter in the Supreme Lord. There's this verse by Queen Kunti. We'll just skip it. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in himself. He doesn't need our prayer. Therefore, when something is offered to him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflections of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Now Prabhupada speaks about, when speaking about this verse, he refers to deity worship. And his explanation is, when the pujari is decorating the deity, how beautifully decorated they are. What a beautiful dress. So as the devotee who designed the outfit and the one who did the fundraising to get the outfit, the one that gave the donation to make the outfit, and the pujari who's placing, they're thinking, the deity will look very nice in this nice outfit. And the Lord doesn't need a nice outfit. The devotee is becoming decorated by that service. The heart of the devotee is becoming decorated unless the devotee is being decorated by nicely decorating. And the example by Prahlad is the example of decorating oneself, seeing yourself in the mirror. So commonly we put on tilak. And as you're putting on tilak, you're not looking at your face because your eyes are part of your face. you're looking at the mirror. And so you're putting on the tilak in the mirror, but you're putting the tilak on your face. The face is being decorated, although it's the image in the mirror that you're seeing. Similarly, the Lord doesn't need anything. So when something is offered, because he's offering prayers, and he's already disqualified himself as one to offer prayers, but if you accept, it's for the benefit of me, or the one who is offering the prayer, or any service. It's the benefit goes to the person who's offering the service. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on is not meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended for the benefit of the devotee. I'm going to skip ahead. Prabhupada's explanation, we are reflections of God. The saying, biblical saying, man is made in the image of God. At least when I grew up, that's how the Bible read. They probably changed it. But that's, man is made in the image of God. So we're not little gods, but we're in his image. We have form because he has form. Not, I have form, so therefore I imagine God to have a form like me. There's a nice fancy word, anthropomorphism. Imagining God to have a form simply because we have a form. That's silly. But it's not the other way around. We have form because God has form. So when Krishna is decorated, the devotees and all living entities are decorated automatically. There's a really nice teaching because of engaged in book distribution for years. I remember this one very well. Prabhupada said, when the Sankirtan devotee goes into the public, distributes a book, and someone gives a contribution for that book. If the devotee takes the money, doesn't disappear somewhere, and the money goes for the service of the deity, then the person that gave the money gets the benefit of the pujari who is rendering the service to the deity. Now the pujari is a very special servitor of the deity. But those who are making contribution to help the service of the deity, the benefit is the same. So the devotee's role is just to be the conduit, the transparent conduit for receiving something on behalf of Krishna that goes to Krishna. That's our duty. And that other person unknowingly is getting this wonderful benefit. You just have to be transparent. Small thing. Besides, don't pocket the money. It belongs, it's meant for Krishna. And by that transparency. And then the people that come and see the deity beautifully decorated. The inspiration, that's a service the pujari can do. And all the other community people that are involved in deity worship is very nice to engage everybody, according to position and training and qualification, creating auspiciousness, creating hearts that are cleansed. Therefore, although I was born in a demoniac family, I may, without a doubt, offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's glories. So, right on our topic of deepening our bhakti. So prayer is standard for anyone who has regard for a supreme being or a greater power or the source above us. Petitioning, even Hiranyakashipu he wanted immortality, so he was seeking that from Brahma, who said, I'm sorry, Charlie, I can't give you something I don't have. I'm not immortal. I can't give you immortality. Well, you're very powerful, maybe this and that and the other. So even Hiranyakashipu, so even the small Hiranyakashipus, or the atheists, they try to deny the existence of God, and they're talking about God. They're talking about him trying to deny his existence. Funny. The obsession to deny the existence of God is a fixation on God. And indirectly, of course, it's offensive in one sense, but they're becoming purified because of their fixation on, like Shishupal. So the great power in the Lord's name, the great power in prayer to the Supreme Lord, and our Hare Krishna mantra, this is names of Krishna, and we're becoming purified anyway, even if we're not qualified. We're becoming purified. None of one's material qualifications, lists them, will engage one in devotional service. With devotion, one should feel, God is great, I am very small, therefore my duty it is to offer prayers to the Lord. Only on this basis can one understand and render service to the Lord. This is Prabhupada's purport. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyasyasmitatvatis. By that devotion, by recognizing our tininess and the unlimitedness of Krishna, it's an impetus for devotional service, and through devotional service we can understand the unknowable. Same as Prahlad's message, Lord Brahma's message, knowing the unknowable. We discussed that the other evening. Okay, so next prayer. Oh my Lord, all the demigods headed by Brahma are sincere servants of your Lordship, who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore, they are not like us, his family. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime, for your pleasure. So now he's revealing truths about, through prayer, truths about Lord Vishnu that those who are not devotees of Vishnu can't understand. His purpose, this fearful feature, because what he's going to get around to is asking Lord Nrisimhadev to withdraw his anger. Because that's what he was asked to do by Brahma and the demigods. Please ask him to put his anger away. So I know that this anger is your pleasure pastime. It's not meant for the devotee. It's meant for destruction of Hiranyakashipu, and that's just a pleasure pastime for you. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. So he goes on. But the demigods, they're trembling. So be kind, just please remove this anger. Because the fierce feature is not meant for the devotees, it's meant for these other people. Okay. My Lord Nrisimhadev, please therefore cease your anger. Now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed, since even saintly persons take pleasure in killing of a scorpion or a snake all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. So now several points. I underline scorpion and snake. Prabhupada told a story that one time he was visiting Bhaktisiddhanta in Mayapur, Sri Chaitanya Math, and he saw one evening that there were a whole group of devotees, and they were with sticks and making a lot of Bengali noise, if you know what I mean. Bhaktisiddhanta heard the noise, so he came to the veranda of his room, looked out, and they called out, "It's a cobra." And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "Kill it." So they killed it. And Prabhupada said, "I was very disturbed because I thought sadhus don't say kill it. Somehow contain it maybe, but you know." Until I read this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, then I understood, oh. Scorpions will attack even without being provoked. So when you see a dead, not all scorpions are deadly. I met one that wasn't. At least that's what the temple president of the temple in Italy told me. We had some meeting in Italy. You heard the story? We had some meeting in Italy. And there were a lot of devotees, so they had a lot of rooms, and they were doing some renovation upstairs, so I got a big room by myself upstairs. The hallway was still half under construction, but the room I was in was finished. And there was a roommate, a scorpion. And he was about this big, and he looked like this guy, had the tail that was going like this, and the two pinchers in the front that were like this. And every day, he circumambulated his kingdom, that room. I'm in the room chanting, and he's, staking out, this is my territory, the whole room, the perimeter. He obviously saw me. I saw him. Like, this is my space. This is my kingdom. That was what the message I got from the guy. So, okay, let's coexist. I know you're here for a few days. I'm here and gone. Let's coexist. And then I told the president. He said, "Oh, don't worry. He won't sting you." I said, "How do you know?" Then, after one day, he took a nap, and he kind of curled up in a little ball, because he caved my kingdom, and he did that program for a while. Then he laid down in a little ball. So I got a broom and swept him out the door, and he rolled out the door and down the hall and found a new kingdom. But I didn't kill him. But back to the verse. When Hiranyakashipu was killed, I don't know if any of you have had this question arise. When there's stories in Krishna book, and it gets to the part where there's this battle between Krishna and the demon, and then the demon gets killed, and everyone goes, "Haribo!" I was wondering, geez, what culture is this? It's here in the Bhagavatam. Because, of course, persons killed by Krishna, they get liberation. That's the Haribo. Not just, and the difficulty that others experience unprovoked by the demon, it's finished. So is it proper that such a person under dharmic principle is killed? Yes. But when it happens, the dharmic followers, they celebrate. It's very nice. Although saintly persons never desire the killing of any living entity, they take pleasure in the killing of envious living entities like snakes and scorpions. This is Prabhupada's purport. Hiranyakashipu was killed because he was worse than a snake or scorpion, and therefore everyone was happy. There's this Bhaktisiddhanta story. So, we'll end with this. Fear is, because that's one of the concluding messages of this prayer, people that meditate on Lord Nrisimhadeva, or when fear comes, calling to your memory or calling his name, Lord Nrisimhadeva, it's meant to help one overcome fear. Now, where does fear come from? Fear comes from identification with the body, and the body has some danger or risk, and you feel fear. You have to get trained up. A child will feel fear. And an adult will feel fear. Your safety is at risk. You feel fear. But fear arises out of ignorance. And if there isn't any ignorance, then there's no fear. Doesn't mean your body won't get, you know, punctured or something, won't die. So fear, one whose intelligence, this is from the Bhagavatam, one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world. False ego. Identification with asat, or asat-grahat, as we heard Prahlad say yesterday, can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Fear ceasing entirely means bodily identification or identification with the temporary is gone. And Lord Nrisimhadeva has such power. There's a very nice devotee, amongst many nice devotees, named Dhruva, who has this big picture book on the lost temples of Nrisimhadeva. Have any of you seen one of those? He can go on. I saw him 3 weeks ago. On and on and on and on and on and on and on about Lord Nrisimhadeva. Even Shaivites, they appreciate Lord Nrisimhadeva as one who drives away fear, and on and on and on and on, and mantras and cultures even outside of India, and the appreciation of Lord Nrisimhadeva. He has a universal appeal in this particular regard. He drives away fear. He gives protection. And this world is a dangerous place. Not just in the Middle East. It's a dangerous place. Anything could happen at any time. Someone was sharing that with me. Whatever we rely upon, in a flash, it's gone. Boom. And when it happens, you feel not safe. What's safe? So how do you go beyond fear? How to go so it's where it's completely ceased? It's where there's shelter of transcendence. Ayam dutiyam abhinivesitaksyat. This Bhagavatam verse. Ishada petasya viparya yo smritihi. Tan maya yato buddha abhajetam. Lord Nrisimhadeva, according to Prahlad, appears to give fearlessness to the devotee. So devotees like Lord Nrisimhadeva. There's lots of Nrisimha Bhaktas. Very, very popular deity. Not just in South India. Very, very popular deity. Here's Prabhupada's explanation. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is effected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and his very life and soul. That's another essential part of Prahlad's teachings, is we need a teacher. He's feeling the need for Narada's association. Now, he's received Narada's association a whole lot. The whole duration of time that Lord Nrisimhadeva was off doing his austerities, at least according to one passage, 100 celestial years. That's a long time to get Narada Muni's association, hearing transcendental knowledge. 100 celestial years. And he, one of the hints he gives, if you want to give me benediction, give me more of Narada's association, because he'll then train me further how to serve you nicely, how to worship you nicely, how to conduct my Krishna conscious activities nicely. Please give me Narada's association. I can never forget him. Please don't ask me to take something which will cause me to forget him. I don't want to forget him. I want to stay in his association and other like-minded persons. This isn't the teaching of Prahlad within his prayers. We can learn a lot from Prahlad's prayers about the way of pure devotional service, because that's the reason Lord Vishnu sent him, was to teach us the way. The great Acharya. In the way of unmixed devotion to Krishna or Vishnu Bhakta. And there, see if there's some comments or discussion. Yeah. Put your hand up again, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. The discussion has been around humility, and so I have three characteristics that I have observed related to humility. Humility.
Humility, okay, I'm ready.
So the first one is that it is always a secondary quality. It is not a quality in itself unless you have another quality.
It's not a quality unto itself unless you have another quality.
Yes. If I'm a nobody, it doesn't make sense for me to be humble.
Oh yes, it does.
Okay.
So, whether you're a somebody or nobody, be humble.
Thank you. The second point is that it is usually identified by others. It is not identified by me.
Yes. That's self-evident.
Yeah. And the third is that humility is about a specific thing.
Not necessarily. It can be just pervasive.
Okay, is it okay if I elaborate just a bit?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. For example, Prahlad Maharaj, he said that he is not qualified to serve the Lord. So this is actually very specific to his quality of being able to serve the Lord. So when I take it in my situation, I say that knowing that, you know, it is very specific, I can still say that, okay, I may not be qualified to do deity service in the temple, but I am still good enough to wash the pots.
Sure.
So in that sense, I'm being humble about the deity service, but at the same time, I'm not demeaning my position.
Well, you can be humble in washing the pots too.
Yeah. Okay, Maharaj, yes. Okay. Okay.
And if you're not, it'll help you become humble.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yes.
On the topic of feeling unqualified for the services that we have, internally one may feel some disqualification and one may be aspiring to achieve full realization of one's disqualification.
Yeah.
Yet externally one's words and therefore it seems one's internal feelings have to be tempered to be kosher in the situation one finds oneself in.
Tempered
to be kosher or appropriate for the situation we find ourselves
kosher
in.
I'm used to devotees using that term. Tempered to be appropriate for
the situation that we find ourselves in.
Okay.
So particularly in relation to Western outreach.
Okay.
One has to be aware of how one's expressions of humility are perceived.
Oh, yeah.
So, as an example, yesterday we were speaking with someone who is looking to create a bridge for his yoga students to the path of bhakti. And we had to give some confidence in our ability to provide that bridge. So is there a correct understanding that while one may be internally aspiring to, at one point in life, come to an uttama platform, one has to very consciously try to rise to a madhyama platform when one is preaching, and therefore...
Yeah, you have to be appropriate for the audience, otherwise there's a disconnect. Whatever your position is or whatever your aspirations are, if you're going to interact with someone, know your audience and be relevant and relatable to your audience in terms and language and mode and expression and so forth. Yeah. Well, but you do that. So I'm not sure why you're asking the question.
I'm asking because words are very much related to how you're feeling internally. So I do temper my words when I'm, you know, interacting in that kind of a situation.
Sure.
To give confidence in my ability as somebody who can represent bhakti yoga and provide that bridge. At the same time, you know, there's always the danger that it's not just words, your feelings also start to, you know, you internally also may shift from that aspiration for humility.
You do your best. And rely on course correction from Supersoul. And if you're open for course correction from Supersoul, or the person who's speaking and they look at you like, you know, what kind of beast are you, or they smile, or however, you know, that's part of the course correction. And we're looking for that because we're trying to do some service. And that's part of humility. We're submissive to Krishna and the indications that he gives us. We want to please him. Ultimately, not just bring somebody to Krishna, we want to please Krishna. Okay. Where is it? Can we have a microphone runner? Can you assist us?
Maharaj, do you have any references in the scriptures where it explains the living entity emanating from Krishna falling into conditioned state?
Where a living entity does what?
Emanating from Krishna and falling into the conditioned state of life.
Immediately goes from Krishna to a conditioned state of life. Is that what you're asking?
No. My question is not complete, Maharaj. When a living entity falls into conditioned state of life...
When a living entity falls to a conditioned state of life...
Yes. And consequently going through the different cycles of life and death...
Yeah.
And elevating to the point of achieving the success. Is there any reference of any living entity?
In the position of what? You speak slowly. I'm like...
Okay.
I'm this old guy and I can't hear so well.
Living entity going through the cycle of life and death and gradually attaining the perfection. Is there any reference of one particular living entity explaining that how they gradually elevated to the highest platform in scriptures?
Yeah. There's Kripa Siddha and there's Sadhana Siddha. You know the difference? One gets mercy and one strives by practice and practice and practice and practice and becomes perfect. Sometimes mercy is just bestowed on that person. Kripa Siddha, Sadhana Siddha. But there is, it's not in the spiritual world, they give you a card. Now I'm a Nitya Siddha, I'm a Sadhana Siddha, I'm a Kripa Siddha. You're Siddha. But your question was, is there any indication of different ways in which one can achieve that perfection?
No, that's not
your question.
I'm trying to understand, is there any example? Like, if you talk about Prahlad Maharaj, talked about...
Oh, that's what you're looking for?
I did not hear
you. You're looking for an example of someone who has, from the fallen state, gone through stages of perfection.
Yes.
Well, how about Narada Muni in his previous life? That he explains his previous life to his disciple, Vyas, and he was not perfect. Or, here's another one, Magari, the hunter, disciple of Narada, became perfect through Narada's mercy. King Chittaketu became perfect through Narada's mercy. You know, there's examples. And you want that there's elements involved in that path of perfection.
Yeah, we always hear these examples considering that once they reach to the perfectional stage, we hear about their immediate previous life, but we don't know.
No. Narada in his previous life, before he was that young boy, was a Gandharva who was, you know, a womanizer. He's a ladies' man. He got expelled from the heavenly kingdom and told you take birth as a sudra. Narada tells that later in the Bhagavatam. So he wasn't, you know. Is that what you're looking for? You're looking for a scriptural example. There's one. You want more?
I mean, I'm just trying to understand, is there only one lifetime that it is explained in the scriptures? Is there any living entity actually fall into the state of condition state, point one, let's say, I understand that, you know, in a spirituality there is no time, but how gradually they progress from one life to the other life to the point of achieving the success? Is there any reference that explains? That's where I'm looking for. But well, you explained
about... I thought I just did it. And I don't know if I need to do it again.
You want me to ask the question again?
No. I'm asking you to give the microphone to someone else. Because I think I've answered your question. It's best if I understood your question. Did I understand? Okay. Yeah. What's up?
Okay, so it first starts with a little quick story. So one day I was doing some japa while I was waiting at the post office, and this guy turned around and was like, "Oh, are you praying?" I said, yeah. He's like, "Oh, I pray too." I'm like, okay. And then he starts asking me questions about, you know, God's real name, right? So I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's Yahweh, whatever, right? Because I can tell." And he's like, we start discussing like Hebrew names of Krishna, of God. And, you know, he gets really like into it. you know, it becomes a debate. You know, now everyone's watching. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, you're really prideful. You know, you're really going hard here. You know, and he said, oh, well, first off, I'm a man and I'm a rabbi, a Hebrew rabbi. And I said, oh, yeah, you got it. You know, I gave it to him.
You're the chosen people.
What I, yeah.
Obeisance is to you.
But what I realize is, isn't it like with Krishna, we always tend to try to have a humble position because we understand that, yeah, yes. But in relation to one another, isn't self-confidence and, position, and pride in some way necessary for people to feel like they matter or they don't lack, they have abundance versus having lack. Because once you feel like you're lacking, you become in a depressive state, right? So, in a way, isn't it necessary for people to have these things in relation to one another?
It's a false crutch. They're leaning on a rubber crutch. I call it rubber crutch.
But isn't position like this rabbi, him having this position, right? As a Hebrew, doesn't it give him that, you know, he's
but
this.
Is he closer to God or not?
Well, I told him I don't think he is because of his
either.
Pride.
Someone that's prideful or full of pride is not close to God. Yeah. No, they're not.
But he was very knowledgeable, you know.
That's okay. Gyan doesn't mean close to God.
Yeah.
Knowledge doesn't, so the pride, same. Go back to the slide with Sridhar Swami's comment. When one has the fruits of piety, but a heart that's not pure, pride, is the result. So the real thing is the heart that's pure, not knowledge or self, the feeling of self-importance. Now, he's able to carry himself in the world, doing with other people like he did with you.
Yeah.
And that's his, whatever it is, sense of self-worth. But it's a false sense of self-worth. Mm. It doesn't hold water. Yeah. It's not pleasing to the personality of Godhead when someone feels pride like that. Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of his devotee. So he'll get an opportunity to have his pride curbed by Krishna's kindness. And maybe he'll say, ouch. But maybe he'll also say, thank you, and become humble instead of proud. So you don't need to worry about that fellow. You're not worried about that fellow. You're asking, what is his position, and how are you to understand what you need to do?
No, I just think that as humans, you know, especially, I don't know, maybe it's New York, but we're very competitive, you know, even just walking down the street.
Yeah.
And so, by nature, isn't it necessary to have these things so that you can survive?
No. If my no answer is an absolute answer. That's why I said it three times. But I may not be on an absolute platform, and therefore I may feel, using your word, I need abundance, or at least a modicum of, but it's false shelter, even the modicum or the abundance, it's a false, in a flash it's gone. It's false shelter. Is it necessary? No, it's not necessary. Psychologically, I may feel insecure unless I have. Especially in when I'm being confronted by someone who has. But that's an insecurity. It's not a need. Say it differently. If you, any one of us, are feeling shelter, That's enough. Abundance isn't needed. If one is not feeling shelter, I'm going to look for something else. But it's a false shelter. Krishna will take care. We don't get lazy. Oh, Krishna's going to take care. We actively do things. But the one who's providing whatever it is not our effort. That's illusion. It's Maya. It's not our effort that's creating abundance or creating necessities or creating the sense of security in stuff.
Yeah, I think the only way to not deal with Maya is to be like a brahmachari.
No.
Because
when you
have a life,
look,
when you have a job, you know,
I don't
all of
see
this.
Too many brahmacharis.
In New York, yeah. All the boys become brahmacharis in New York. But it's just when you have a life
and
you have to take the train.
How long will they remain brahmacharis, those boys in New York?
I don't know.
I do. And it's not, it's just a stage of life. And it's not like, you know, it's just a stage of life for many of them. And that's fine, stage of life. But it's not, you know, that sense of, anyway, I'd have to repeat myself.
No, I understand. I just think it's hard to try to have, you know, when we hear these prayers, we think, oh, I'm going to try to do that with people. And then the moment you try, you're like, no, you know, I got to show this person like who I am. You know, it gets like that, you know, in work or whatever the case, like interacting with people. It can be very subtle or it could be very like robust, right? But in any case, it's very easy to be humble with Krishna, but with people, it's like a whole nother ballgame, right? And so that it's just what I observe, you know, and it's what I experience. And so I'm just curious as to how, I guess you just keep chanting and someday, you know, you just become this, you're like floating and it's like, okay, I don't know. It's curious. I'm just curious, you know, I'm curious. That's all. You know, seeing people and how we move.
Okay, you have a conviction, and I don't share that same conviction.
No, I understand. Yeah.
Okay. we should be responsible in our service to Krishna, which includes the holistic picture of a reasonable life according to our position, whether it's New York or another lovely city like Chicago or some other place. So it's not place specific or gender specific or race specific. It's, you know, we're servants and we're meant for Krishna's service. And we're actively engaged in a holistic way of taking care of our psychophysical needs, our psycho and physical needs as a service to Krishna. And we accept what Krishna provides because we know he'll take care. You have realization. You've shared. You make some endeavor, but things change with Krishna's hand involved. There's some sacrifice involved, but let the sacrifice go to Krishna. And when that sense of connection is there, What can harm you? What can touch you, emotionally or otherwise? So, that's the shelter position. And it's not just those that are wearing saffron. It's anyone. Anyone. So, we're repeating. We're going to end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.